From the pen of P.G. Woodhouse, this is What Ho Jeeves. Starring Richard Briers as Bertie Wooster and Michael Hordern as Jeeves, What Ho Jeeves was adapted and produced by the BBC. I'm your host, Fred Callan.
If you've been following this narrative of mine with the proper care, you will know that when I arrived at Brinkley Court, my Aunt Dahlia's residence in Worcestershire, 2 days after my return from Cannes, the place was more or less loaded down above the plimsoll line with aching hearts. As you will no doubt recall, Jeeves, for so long the brains of the Worcester household, had suddenly lost his grip, following a domestic dispute about whether I should or should not wear a rather natty white mess jacket with brass buttons I had purchased in Cannes. As a result, I had been compelled to take the blighter off the Finknottle case, because his handling of it had been so footling. And I had forthwith sent Gussie down to Brinkley the day before my own arrival, reasoning that all the poor rabbit needed to touch him off was a romantic setting. It was while I was giving Jeeves a précis of my operations at that juncture that there began to develop in the Worcester brain the germ of a beautifully simple idea that eventually was to prove so... Well, you'll see, if you hang around.
Think, Jeeves. At the moment, as you are aware, Gussie is a mere jelly in the presence of Miss Bassett, letting, what is it? It's a phrase of yours, letting something do something, what is it? Cats enter into it, if I'm not mistaken.
Letting I dare not wait upon I would, sir?
Yeah, that's right. But how about the cats?
Like the poor cat in the adage, sir.
Exactly. It beats me how you think up these things, Jeeves. Anyway, that is Gussie's position. He cannot bring himself up to scratch, but put him in romantic surroundings like Brinkley Court, and who knows what'll happen, Jeeves. Great lovers through the ages have fixed up the preliminary formalities at Brinkley.
Indeed, sir.
Absolutely. And besides, ask yourself how much more ginger he'll have in a week or so after he and the Bassett have been helping themselves to sausages out of the same dish day after day at the breakfast sideboard. Cutting the same ham, ladling out communal kidneys and bacon, why the... Oh, golly, Jeeves.
Sir?
I've had one of my ideas. You heard me mention sausages, kidneys, bacon and ham.
Most distinctly, sir.
Well, there must be nothing of that. It's fatal. The wrong note entirely. I must warn Gussie without delay. What he's got to do is to create in this girl's mind the impression that he is pining away for love of her. This cannot be done by wolfing sausages.
There is much in what you say, sir.
Very well, then. Take a telegram. Finknottle, Brinkley Court, Market Snosbury, Worcestershire. Lay off the sausages. Avoid the ham. Bertie. Send it off, Jeeves, instanta.
Very good, sir.
Thank you, Jeeves. So there you have it. My initial realization that the one infallible method of indicating to a girl that you love her is to shun the foodstuffs. As I motored down to Brinkley the following afternoon, it seemed to me that I might bear this in mind when formulating my plans for rendering everything hotsy-totsy once more between Angela and Tuppy. And so, on arrival at Brinkley, as related, I immediately sought out Aunt Dahlia in order to learn what had caused the outbreak of hostilities on that front. As she told the story, it was quite clear that Tuppy had made a complete ass of himself. But Bertram is nothing if not broad-minded, so before putting on the black cap, I scoured the garden for the fellow in order to get a second opinion. He was sitting on a step when I found him, moodily bunging stones at a flower pot. In build and appearance, Tuppy somewhat resembles a bulldog, and his aspect at this moment was that of one of these fine animals who had just been refused a slice of cake. Melancholy, as I remember Jeeves saying once about Pongo Twistleton when he was trying to knock off smoking, had marked him for her own.
Hello, Tuppy, old chap. How are you, old man?
Oh. Are you here, Bertie?
Yes, I'm here.
Just passing through or come to stay?
Oh, it all depends. I may remain, I may push on. My plans run certain.
Fine. Bertie.
Hello.
Shall I tell you something?
Certainly, old bird. I'm just beginning to feel the scene could do with a bit more dialogue.
Angela and I, we've bust up.
I know. Some little friction, I gather, in Ree the Shark that tried to make a light lunch of Angela at Cannes.
Yes. I said it must have been a flatfish.
So I heard. And if I may say so, I think you might have behaved with a bit more tact, old man.
Tact?
Well, yes. Was it nice? Was it quite kind to take the bloom off Angela's shark like that? Angela's shark is very dear to her. The thing was grazing at her ankle bone for several minutes after all. You must see, it was a bit of a sock on the jaw for her to hear it dismissed as a mere flatfish.
But, Bertie, what about my side of the thing?
Your side?
Yes, you don't suppose I would have exposed this dashed synthetic shark for the flatfish it undoubtedly was if there hadn't been causes that led up to it, do you? What induced me to speak as I did was the fact that Angela, the little squirt, had just been most offensive, and I seized the opportunity to get a bit of my own back.
Offensive?
Exceedingly offensive, purely on the strength of my having let fall some casual remark to the effect that I wondered what Anatole was going to give us for dinner. She said that I was too material and ought not to be always thinking of food. Material, my elbow. As a matter of fact, I am particularly spiritual.
Quite.
I don't see any harm in wondering what Anatole was going to give us. Do you?
Of course not. A mere ordinary tribute of respect to a great artist. But all the same, Tuppy, it seems a pity that the frail craft of love should come a stinker like this when a few manly words of contrition
might... Bertie, you aren't suggesting that I should climb down?
It would be the fine big thing, old egg.
I wouldn't dream of climbing down.
Tuppy! She's broken-hearted about this rift.
How do you know? Have you seen her?
No, but I bet she is. I'm convinced that a kindly word from you is all that it requires.
No, Bertie, I'm sorry. It would be fatal. I know girls. Grovel and the best of them get uppish.
That I know, Tuppy, of course. I should have suggested it before. Don't eat any dinner tonight.
What?
Yes. Oh, can't you see how impressive that would be? For a start, she knows how devoted you are to food.
I am not devoted to... food?
No.
I am not devoted to food at all.
No, quite. All I meant was...
This rot about my being devoted to food has got to stop. I have a good, healthy appetite, and I'm always willing to consider anything Anatole may put before me. But
Quite, Tuppy. All I meant was, if she sees you push your dinner away untasted, she will realize your heart is aching. It's an old trick, but it never fails.
Push my dinner away, eh?
Yes.
Push away a dinner cooked by Anatole?
Yes.
Push it away untasted?
Yes.
Let us get this absolutely straight, Bertie. Tonight, at dinner, when the butler offers me riz de veau à la financière, or whatever it may be, hot from Anatole's hands, you wish me to push it away untasted?
Yes.
All right, then.
You do it.
Yes. I will.
Fine, Tuppy. Splendid.
Talking of dinner, old man, look at the time. We better go and dress. Come on.
Oh, right-ho.
Yes, it's an excellent idea, Bertie. The more I consider it, excellent.
Thanks, Tuppy.
One of Jeeves's best, in fact.
What? Jeeves?
Yes. You can tell him from me when you see him. I'm much obliged.
What, Tuppy? You aren't suggesting that you think this scheme I've been sketching out is Jeeves?
But of course it is, old man. You wouldn't have thought of a wheeze like that in a million years.
Oh, wouldn't I? Let me tell you, gossip...
Come on, Bertie!
Jeeves isn't the only onion in the hash, you know.
Come on, Bertie!
Jeeves. Well, I'm dashed. It was as though somebody had slapped Bertram Wooster across the face with a wet dish rag, hearing those fat-headed words of Tuppy's. It is not too much to say that I was piqued to the tonsils. I mean to say, one does not court praise... The adulation of the multitude means very little to one. But all the same, when one has taken the trouble to whack out a highly juicy scheme to benefit an in-the-soup friend in his hour of travail, it's pretty foul to find him giving the credit to one's personal attendant, particularly if that personal attendant is a man who goes about the place not lacking mess jackets. However, after 10 minutes playing with my toy duck in the bath, composure began to return to the Worcester soul. And it was much more the merry old Bertram who slid back to his bedchamber to dress. Jeeves was there unpacking and laying out the dinner disguise when I arrived, and he greeted the young master with his customary suavity.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Jeeves.
I trust you had a pleasant bath, sir?
Very pleasant, thank you, Jeeves. Hand me a sock or two, will you, and I'll begin to don.
Certainly, sir.
Well, Jeeves, a nice mess things seem to have gone and got themselves into in this rustic joint.
So I have been informed, sir.
The rift between Tuppy Glossop and my cousin Angela would appear to be serious.
Yes, sir. Your opinion in the servants' hall is inclined to take a grave view of the situation.
And the thought that springs to your mind, no doubt, is that I shall have my work cut out to fix things up.
Yes, sir.
You are wrong, Jeeves. I have the thing well in hand.
You surprise me, sir.
I thought I would. Yes, Jeeves, I have just been in conference with Mr. Glossop, and everything is taped out.
Indeed. Sir, might I inquire...
You know my methods, Jeeves. Apply them. Have you, by any chance, been gnawing on the thing at all?
Oh, yes, sir. I have always been much attached to Miss Angela, and I felt that it would afford me great pleasure were I to be able to be of service to her.
A laudable sentiment. But I suppose you drew blank?
No, sir. I was rewarded with an idea.
Oh, and what was it?
It occurred to me, sir, that a reconciliation might be effected between Mr. Glossop and Miss Angela by appealing to that instinct which prompts gentlemen in time of peril to hasten to the rescue.
Jeeves, stop! Don't tell me you were contemplating descending to that old he-saved-her-from-drowning gag. I am surprised, Jeeves. Surprised and pained.
No, sir, not that. But the thought did cross my mind as I walked in the grounds and passed the building where the fire bell hangs, that a sudden alarm of fire in the night might result in Mr. Glossop endeavouring to assist Miss Angela to safety.
Rotten, Jeeves.
Well, sir...
No good. Not a bit like it.
I fancy, sir...
No, Jeeves, no more. Enough has been said. Let us drop the subject.
Very good, sir.
I was aware you'd lost your grip, Jeeves, but I never suspected you'd gone to pieces like this.
Sir?
I mean this frightful disposition to stick straws in your hair and talk like a perfect ass. It's the old story, I suppose. A man's brain whizzes along for years, exceeding the speed limit, and then something suddenly goes wrong with the steering gear, and it skids and comes a smeller in a ditch. It's a bit elaborate, Jeeves, this scheme of yours, that's all. It's your old failing. You can see, can't you? It's a bit elaborate.
It is possible that it might be considered open to that criticism, sir, but faute de mieux...
I don't get you, Jeeves.
A French expression, sir, signifying for want of anything better.
Jeeves, I understand perfectly well what faute de mieux means. I did not recently spend 2 months among our Gallic neighbours for nothing. What caused my bewilderment was that you should be employing the expression, well knowing that there is no bally faute de mieux about it at all. Where'd you get that faute de mieux stuff? Didn't I tell you I had everything taped out?
Yes, sir, but...
What do you mean, but...
Well, sir...
Push on, Jeeves. I am ready, even anxious, to hear your views.
Well, sir, if I may take the liberty of reminding you of it, your plans in the past have not always been uniformly successful.
I see. My waistcoat, please. Thank you. It is true, Jeeves, that once or twice in the past I may have missed the bus. This, however, I attribute entirely to bad luck.
Indeed, sir?
Certainly. On the present occasion, I shall not fail because my scheme is rooted in human nature.
Indeed, sir?
Jeeves, don't keep saying indeed, sir. No doubt nothing is further from your mind than to convey such a suggestion, but you have a way of stressing the in and then coming down with a thud on the deed that makes it virtually tantamount to, oh, yeah. Correct this, Jeeves.
Very good, sir.
I tell you, I have everything lined up, so listen. Tonight at dinner, I recommended Tuppy to follow Gussie's example and lay off the food.
Sir?
Well, pushing the food away untasted is a universally recognized sign of love, Jeeves.
I fear Miss Angela will merely attribute Mr. Glossop's abstinence to indigestion, sir.
Oh, my golly. Do you think so?
Yes.
No, wait. I see what's going on. I see what's at the bottom of all this, Jeeves. Mortified by the consciousness of your ineptitude. Ineptness? Ineptitude. You're simply trying to hamper and obstruct.
Oh, no, sir.
Yes, Jeeves, you are. The old green-eyed monster sweating away at its stand again.
Oh, no, sir. I assure you...
Well, be that as it may, Jeeves, it does not alter the fact that you have put out the wrong coat. Be so good, my man, as to put that bally black dinner jacket thing, or smoking, as we call it on the Côte d'Azur, back in the cupboard, and bring out my white mess jacket with the brass buttons.
But, sir... Surely you are not intending to...
The mess jacket, Jeeves.
Very good, sir.
Thank you, Jeeves. Good evening.
Good evening.
Ha! That showed him. I was a bit fed with Jeeves, I must say. Admittedly, I'd knocked the stuffing out of the fellow in no uncertain manner. But the trouble with scoring off Jeeves is that there's never any play of expression on his finely chiseled to indicate his discomfort. His F.C. simply preserves the quiet stolidity of a stuffed moose, and this detracts from the pleasure involved. However, I could see that there was no percentage to be gained in worrying about Jeeves's facial expressions, so dismissing him from my mind, I gave the good old J a slight tug, so that it was nestling snugly abaft the shoulder blades, and began a leisurely saunter towards the drawing-room. Only Aunt Dahlia and her Pomeranian were on the strength when I oozed in, and both looked considerably down among the wines and spirits. This aunt, as my devoted followers will know, is the genial and popular proprietress of Milady's Boudoir, a weekly journal for the delicately nurtured.
and she was looking at the moment as if she just received a deputation of 109 authors all banging their fists on her desk and asking for more money. Sandbagged, if you know what I mean.
I say, what's up, Aunt Dahlia?
Hello, Eyesore. What do you think you're made up as?
Huh? Ah, the jacket, you mean.
You look like one of the chorus of male guests at Abernathy Towers in Act Two of a touring musical comedy.
Aunt Dahlia!
Oh, let it go. If you want to give my butler a laugh, what does it matter? What does anything matter now? Oh, shush!
What's all this death, where is thy stinkfulness for, aged relative? Tails up!
Tails up, bedash!
What's wrong?
Bertie, you remember that money I lost at Cannes?
Oh, your baccarat binge. That's what's troubling you.
Well, it is. I still haven't thought of a way of telling Tom about it.
Well, why do you have to tell Uncle Tom about it?
Why? Well, because I've got to get a cheque for £500 out of him for Milady's boudoir by August the 3rd at the latest. That's why. The printers have been showing a nasty spirit for months.
Ah, Dave, you don't mean the boudoir's on the rocks again.
Well, it will be if Tom doesn't cough up. The bally sheet's still turning the corner.
But I thought he'd been doing that for 2 years now.
Well, it was, and it's still at it. Till you run a weekly paper for women, you don't know what corners are.
I see. Surely Aunt Dahlia, Uncle Tom must have got used to footing the bills for the boudoir by this time. Why not simply ask him for the money?
Well, I tell you, Bertie. First, because he's just had a demand from the income tax people for an additional £58.1 and 3, and all he's talking about at the moment is how this sinister trend of socialistic legislation is plunging civilization into the melting pot. And second, because I already have asked him for it, just before we went to Cannes.
Wouldn't he give it you?
Oh, certainly he gave it to me. He brassed up like an officer and a gentleman. That was the money I lost at baccarat.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There isn't much you do know.
Hmm. Tut.
What did you say?
I said tut.
Say it once again, young Bertie, and I'll biff you where you stand. I've enough to endure without being tutted at.
Oh, quite.
Any tutting that's required, I'll attend to myself. And the same applies to clicking the tongue, if you are thinking of doing that.
Oh, far from it.
Good.
Which is that I know how deeply attached you are to this paper of yours, old flesh and blood. Seeing it go down the drain would be like watching a loved child sink for the third time in some pond or mere, wouldn't it?
It would.
Well, then, in that case, Uncle Tom must be carefully prepared for the touch. The question I ask myself is, how? Hmm. Ah, now. I got it! Out! Aunt Dahlia, there's only one course to pursue. You must fall into line with my other clients. Eat less meat.
Bertie, must you drivel?
I'm not drivelling.
I dare say that to a man of your high standards, it doesn't come under the heading of drivel, but...
It's all right, I can see, I haven't made myself clear. Have no misgivings, Aunt Dahlia, this is the real Tabasco. When I said eat less meat, what I meant was that you must refuse your oats at dinner tonight.
What? Oh, shush!
Yes, yes. Just sit there looking blistered and wave away each course as it comes with a weary gesture of resignation. You see what'll happen. Uncle Tom will notice your loss of appetite, and I'm prepared to bet that at the conclusion of the meal, he will come to you and say, Dahlia, darling. I think he calls you Dahlia, does he? Dahlia, darling, he will say. Dahlia, darling. I noticed at dinner tonight that you were a bit off your feed. Is anything the matter, Dahlia, darling? Why, yes, Tom, darling, you will reply. It is kind of you to ask, darling. The fact is, darling, I am terribly worried, darling. My darling,
when
he will say...
are you going to get to the point, you ass? To judge by their dialogue, these Travises must be the soppiest pair of blighters that ever broke biscuit.
We are almost there, Aunt Dahlia. My darling, he will say tenderly, is there anything I can do? To which your reply will be there jolly well is, viz, reach for his checkbook and start writing.
Bertie, this is positively bright. I believe it might work.
It's bound to work. I recommended it to Tuppy.
Young gossip.
In order to soften Angela.
Splendid.
And to Gussie Finknottle, who wants to make a hit with Madeline Bassett.
Well. What a busy little brain it is.
Oh, always working, Aunt Dahlia, always working.
You're not the chump I took you for, Bertie.
When did you ever take me for a chump?
Oh, sometime last summer. I forget what gave me the idea. Yes, Bertie, this scheme is really bright. I suppose, in fact, Jeeves suggested it.
What? Jeeves did not suggest it, Aunt Dahlia. I resent these implications. Jeeves has nothing to do with it, whatever.
Well, all right. No need to get excited about it.
Well, why does everyone assume that Jeeves is the only fellow with brain? Jeeves, my eye.
All right. Oh, thank God for that. Come along, young Bertie. Come along now.
Jeeves, well, I'm dashed. I really am dashed. Jeeves.
Conditions being what they were at Brinkley, I hadn't exactly expected the evening meal to be particularly effervescent. Nor was it. Silent, sombre. The whole thing more than a bit like Christmas dinner on Devil's Island. I tried to escape from this morgue as soon as I could, But Aunt Dahlia roped me in for a game of backgammon directly after dinner, and it was some little time before I could sneak back to the sanctuary of my room. On entering it, I found Tuppy Glossop pacing up and down in an overwrought way, like a zoo lion who has heard the dinner gong go and is hoping the keeper won't forget him in the general distribution. He was kicking chairs and things.
Hello, Tuppy. Did you want to see me?
Yes, I did, you blasted Worcester.
What's this? What's this? Have you nothing to tell me about Angela?
Only that she's a blister.
What? Hasn't she come clustering round yet?
She has not.
Oh, that's very odd. Well, she must have noticed your lack of appetite.
Lack of appetite? I'm as hollow as the Grand Canyon.
Quite. She's probably looking for you now, Tuppy.
Who is Angela?
Yes, she must have noticed your supreme sacrifice.
She didn't notice it at all, the little fathead.
Tuppy!
Of all the damn silly ideas I ever heard in my puff, Worcester, that recent scheme of yours was the most drivelling and pointless. That's all I have to say to you. To think that I sat there watching one of Anatole's supremest dinners flit by, course after course, merely on the advice of Bertie Worcester. Next time you start hatching schemes in that apology of a brain of yours, for God's sake, count me out, will you? Unless you want me to starve to death. Good night!
Well, I never.
Did you call, sir?
No, Jeeves. That was Mr. Glossop. I fear his privations have tried him sorely. He was about as chummy as a wolf on the steppes of Russia, which has just seen a fat, juicy peasant shin up a high tree.
I'm sorry to hear that, sir. Might I inquire whether Miss Angela has reacted to Mr. Glossop's act of self-abnegation in the manner you anticipated?
Well, that's what's so confoundedly rummy, Jeeves. She hasn't. I find it incredible that a girl of her natural sweetness and tender-heartedness should not have been moved to her foundations by what she saw tonight.
Indeed, sir.
Well, yes, Jeeves. The browsing and sluicing were of the highest quality, but Tuppy passed them up like a professional fasting man.
Perhaps Miss Angela's pride prevents her from seeking out Mr. Glossop, sir.
Perhaps, Jeeves, yes. What I must do is go and dig her out. I wouldn't be at all surprised to find her in the drawing-room with her heart bleeding freely, all ripe for an immediate reconciliation, Jeeves.
It is by no means impossible, sir.
No, Jeeves. Right-o, then. To the drawing-room it is.
In the drawing-room, however, when I entered, only Aunt Dahlia met the eye. It seemed to me that she gave me rather a jaundiced view when I hove in sight. But this, having so recently beheld Tuppy in his agony, I attributed to the fact that she, like him, had only about half a spoonful of soup inside her. You can't expect an empty aunt to beam like a full aunt.
Oh, it's you, is it, young Bertie?
It is, of course. Where's Angela?
Gone to bed.
Already?
She said she had a headache.
Oh, I don't like the sound of that much. No, that's definitely a bit disquieting.
What did you want her for?
Oh, nothing. I just thought she might like a stroll and a chat.
Oh, are you going for a stroll? Where?
Oh, hither and thither.
Then I wonder if you would mind doing something for me, Bertie.
Give it a name, aged R.
It won't take you long. You know that path that runs past the greenhouses into the kitchen garden? If you go along it, you come to a pond.
That's right.
Well, will you get a good stout piece of rope or cord and go down that path till you come to the pond?
To the pond, right.
And look about you till you find a nice heavy stone or a fairly large brick will do.
I see. Stone or brick, yes. And then?
Then I want you, like a good boy, to fasten the rope to the brick and tie it round your damned neck and jump into the pond and drown yourself.
What?
Yes, and in a few days I will send to have you fished up and buried because I shall need to dance on your grave.
But, Aunt Dahlia, what is all this about? I mean, you seem pipped with Bertram.
Pipped?
Noticeably pipped. Why this ill-concealed animus?
Who was the ass? Who was the chump? Who was the dithering idiot who talked me, against my better judgment, into going without my dinner?
I see. It's all right, Aunt Dahlia. I know just how you're feeling. A bit on the hollow side. What? But have faith, old thing. Pretty soon Uncle Tom will be along bursting with sympathy and anxious inquiries.
Oh, will he? Will he? Do you know where he is now, you hellhound? He's in his study, with his face buried in his hands, muttering about civilization and melting pots.
Eh? Why?
Because it has just been my painful duty to inform him that Anatole has given notice.
What?
Well, what do you expect a sensitive, temperamental French cook to do if you go about urging everybody to refuse all food? I hear
that when the first two courses came back to the kitchen practically untouched, his feelings were so hurt that he cried like a child. And when the rest of the dinner started homing in on him, he came to the conclusion that the whole thing was a studied and calculated insult, and decided to hand in his portfolio.
Golly!
You may well say golly! Anatole, God's gift to the gastric juices, gone like the dew off the petal of a rose, all through your idiocy. A fat chance I have of ever getting that money out of Tom now. Well, you know how easily his digestion goes on the blink. Oh, without Anatole, it'll be like old home week in Moscow.
Quite.
Oh, I might have known that some hideous disaster would strike this house like a thunderbolt if once you wriggled your way in and started trying to be clever.
I'm sorry, Aunt Dahlia.
What's the good of being sorry?
But I acted for what I deemed the best.
Well, another time, try acting for the worst, and then we may possibly escape with a mere flesh wound.
Yes, it's bad. Quite bad, without a doubt. Certainly a nasty jar for one and all. But have no fear, Aunt Dahlia. I'll fix everything.
What? If you dare try any more of your lunatic schemes. Oh, get out. Get out. Get out before I throw this handsomely bound volume of the works of Alfred Lord Tennyson at you. Get out. Get out.
Oh, dear. I think Bertram's made something of a floater.
What Ho Jeeves is produced by the BBC. Richard Briers is Bertie Wooster, and Michael Hordern plays Jeeves. I'm your host, Fred Callan. Senior producer for NPR Playhouse is Mary Lou Finnegan.